This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Dr. Tim Ball, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg and one of the leading scientifically based critics to the whole climate change movement, at least man-made climate change, and of course the political agenda that goes along with that. If you were listening to our programming on Monday, you know that very recently, British Prime Minister Gordon Brown said that the world basically has about 7 weeks left in order to set the course for rescuing the planet from climate change as we head up to the Copenhagen Climate Change Summit. Here's what the Prime Minister had to say in the last couple days.
In every era, there are one or two moments when nations come together and reach agreements that make history because they change the course of history. And Copenhagen must be such a time. There are now fewer than 50 days to set the course for the next few decades.
He went on to say in the speech, and we'll hear more of it in a moment, Dr. Ball, that basically there are 50 days for the world to agree that something needs to be done in a significant way or else we'll face global catastrophe. Your reaction?
Well, of course, when he talks about meetings that of events that change the course of history, he's assuming that they're for the positive. And I happen to think that if they do make the agreements they're planning at Copenhagen, it will be a negative impact. And of course, it's part of the attempt to push the whole cap and trade and to argue that humans are causing climate change and global warming when it's simply not the case. The other thing, Greg, is that there have been doomsayers throughout the history of the world. And as I keep pointing out to people, not one of them has been right, because if one of them was right, we wouldn't be here today. And so this kind of doomsaying, now that's not to say there aren't problems. We don't want to be Pollyannas either. But certainly this kind of hysteria and doomsaying contributes nothing. And it's simply, when you push policies under fear and threat, they're invariably not good policies, and of course that's what's happening here. But I think with Mr. Brown, he should look to his own polls, because in a recent poll it was showed that the Labour Party, which he's the leader of, was third in Britain. Even the Liberal Democrats, and the Liberals essentially died in England in 1900, outpolled him. And of course, he's also casting around for some sort of thing that would divert attention from the serious economic problems they've got. And interestingly enough, so many of those economic problems are related to their energy policies. Under Blair, for example, and he inherited that, Blair got elected twice on the campaign slogan of 20% wind power by 2020. And as a result, they didn't maintain or they shut down the coal burning plants and the coal mines, and also they didn't replace the nuclear power. And of course they're finding now that the wind is just not the substitute. So he's got all kinds of problems, and so if he can divert attention and pretend to the world that Copenhagen is going to be the great saving moment and it's because of people like him that it occurred, he's got another thing coming.
Dr. Ball, basically what the Prime Minister said as the comments continued was that if the change doesn't come and if the world doesn't come together before too long, namely the next 50 days or so, less than that actually now, that soon it'll be too late and the damage will be irreversible. But if a significant agreement doesn't happen at Copenhagen, what happens then to the movement?
Well, of course, what happens is that nothing. In fact, if we do nothing, and most politicians are not going to do anything. I mean, Brown can spout all he wants, but when they get to Copenhagen, they won't do it. And India and China have already said they're not participating, and so it would be foolish for the West to do anything unilateral, and the politicians know that. What's going on here, Greg? And I talk to a lot of the politicians. They are being bullied into positions that most of them understand are not correct. It's sort of over the back fence. They'll say to me, well, we agree with you. We know the science is not there, but it's an environmental issue, and we daren't appear to be doing anything that is not good for the environment. And so they do what I call putting on the cloak of green. They appear to be green, but underneath, their feet aren't moving at all. And of course, you're going to see this with the U.S. Senate when they get to vote on the cap and trade in the fall. And we're already hearing that it's not going to go through. And look at what happened in the U.S. Congress. It only got through, I think, by 7 votes. And how much of that was due to promises that Nancy Pelosi made to people to get their votes. So even if Copenhagen occurs, I don't think anything will happen with it. And that's probably the best thing that could happen.
Dr. Ball, the Prime Minister offered a few alleged statistics to back up his claim for the urgency here. Here's one of them on ice levels.
Only last week we saw new evidence of the rapid loss of Arctic sea ice.
That's simply not true. The Arctic ice, in fact, was much larger this winter than it has been the previous 2 winters and back to levels that it was in 1979. And it's recovering at a more rapid rate. So that's simply not correct. And so, as I said, the evidence that we're cooling continues, and if they plan for warming, that would be far more devastating.
Here's what he said about the number of deaths annually and how that number will rise soon if something significant isn't done.
And every year, the effects of climate change are already killing 300,000 people. The numbers killed by the Indian Ocean tsunami, and the toll could rise to 500,000 each year by 2030.
Obviously a dire prediction there. Is there any way to quantify that, Dr. Ball?
Well, no, there isn't. And of course, it's estimates of the damage due to natural events. I mean, he mentioned tsunamis. What are you going to do? Is going to stop the new tsunamis? What you can do is tell people to live on high ground. But, and to put that in perspective, the estimates are that over 300,000 people died from the droughts in China back in the 1930s. And so the death from natural events, 300,000, is minuscule. And in fact, I would argue with you, and you can see this with statistics, by the way, the number of deaths from tornadoes in the U.S. has dropped dramatically. And it's because of people being aware of not living in areas of tornadoes, of building better houses, of a little bit better warning so they can get into basements and so on and so forth. So the 300,000 number sounds dramatic, but it really isn't at all. And my guess is that probably that number die in car accidents a year at least worldwide, and other things. So it's just playing with the numbers and playing with, as you said, how is that number verifiable, and so on. But you really don't need to verify it. All you need to do is put it against other deaths from natural disasters that provide much greater deaths. For example, the number of deaths from cold, people dying of the cold in England each winter, is almost triple what it is from dying from heat, and yet they're telling you, more warming is a greater problem. And so it's just this playing with statistics and taking them out of context and using natural events and natural deaths and presenting them as if somehow humans are the cause of all of this.
And Dr. Ball, one more question before I let you go, sir. And obviously the issue of global warming takes on many different dimensions, or the allegations that man-made global warming is about to be a major catastrophe here. One of the things that Prime Minister Brown talked about, and I mentioned one, was that within a quarter century, 750 million people living in the shadow of the Himalayas would be without water. He says by 2080, 1.8 billion could be dying without water. The same people, sir, allege that our oceans will be rising, and there is equipment, obviously, that can turn that ocean water into drinkable water. So how are people going to be dying of thirst when the water levels are rising?
Well, that's a very good question. And one of the things that I've been talking about, and in my studies of climate, I very quickly realized that the single most devastating weather event for flora and fauna, that is plants and animals, and therefore the human condition, are droughts. I just mentioned the droughts in China back in the 30s and so on. And one of the issues that's going to grow, because the environmentalists chose climate and global warming as the vehicle for cap and trade and more government control of our lives, but they're going to shift to the water issue. And one of the ways you see this, Greg, is in the IPCC reports and the claims, and Brown is now parroting that, saying, well, this there's going to be more droughts, but with global warming. But that's counterintuitive. If you've got global warming, you've got more moisture in the atmosphere, and therefore more potential for precipitation, not less. But they know, and by the way, again, my own experience and research, particularly with farmers, and notice that what's going to happen with the precipitation is important to the farmers. People know that droughts are devastating, and so this is the play. And of course, the water issue is one. I taught a water resources class because of my interest from the climate side of it for 27 years, and served on several government committees on water and water resources. But you're absolutely right. The problem is distribution. There are many ways of getting increased water supply technology. You're talking about desalination and so on. Mm-hmm. There are some global areas of water problems, and I've been pointing them out, but nobody wants to listen. For example, in Iraq, while the war was going on and the infrastructure was being damaged, Turkey and Syria built huge dams on the Tigris and Euphrates, which will increase evaporation in the upstream, which means a lower flow in the river going through Iraq. So Iraq, is that's their main water supply. There are going to be some issues with that. But, of course, not to overplay those things. Problems are only problems if you're not aware of them. So there are some localized water shortage problems. But overall, water is not a problem. But it's the one issue that scares people as much, if not more, than climate change.
And Dr. Ball, unfortunately, sir, we'll have to leave it there. As always, we appreciate your time and your expertise.
Well, thank you for the opportunity again, Greg.
Absolutely. Dr. Tim Ball is former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.